We have a very special episode for you today with our good friend Scott Robon returning to the show to discuss how industrial engineering and the concepts of Edward Deming and operational efficiency, normally discussed in manufacturing circles, apply to our niche of technology, namely network operations. This is an interesting one in my opinion, so let's get started. My name is Philip Gervasi, and this is Telemetry Now. Scott, welcome back to the podcast. Really appreciate you returning as a guest. I mean, I consider you a friend of the show and enjoy having you come on. And I really value your insight because of your interesting background, not only as an engineer and as somebody who's got a lot of business acumen, but also because of what we're going to talk about today as far as your educational background, formal educational background from years ago. I won't say how many years ago, but let's just say X number of years ago, that I really think applies in a very special and unique way. It's a unique perspective that I think is very, very relevant as we're going to discuss today. So now that I've buttered you up and stroked your ego, why don't you introduce yourself for the audience? And I would like to hear a little bit of detail around that background.
Sure. Well, I feel like now that I've achieved friend of the show status, I'm at the next level in my career. So I feel like there needs to be challenge coins, for the Telemetry
coins.
Now friend of the show.
All right.
So, you're generous. Thank you for that. Yeah, let's take a little different tack today. Talk more about some things that are adjacent and around networking, but we'll try to connect some dots. So academically, we'll just put years to it. I graduated high school in 1984 in Syracuse, New York. I did not have a lot of guidance on what to do in college. And I only applied to two schools. And I liked math, and I worked with computers in high school, so I thought engineering would probably be a good way to go. I ended up at RIT and started in the computer engineering program, which was, a hybrid of computer science and their microelectronics program, which was one of the first schools in the Northeast to have a micro-E program where you can actually go in a clean room in a bunny suit and learn how to make chips. Mm-hmm. But it was not 3-nanometer technology in 1984. I lasted one term in that program. I had a wake-up call with the department head in a very, very challenging intro to computer engineering class. And then I just kind of landed in industrial engineering. And I won't give you a full disposition on everything industrial engineering entails. Some people jokingly refer to it as imaginary engineering or the liberal arts of engineering. I never had to take a circuits class, and I avoided some of the harder mechanical engineering classes as well. But there's real focus on process and structure. So I had a lot of statistics, some really interesting classes on material science and what happens when you heat metal and bend metal over and over and over, and how things look on a manufacturing shop floor. One key concept that I kind of caught on early was workflow. When you're arranging the assembly of complex machines and need to have multiple parts come together in certain sequence to create an assembly, you really have to arrange what gets made when, where it gets put together, and what those assembly times require, and any other material transit times and so forth. So if you fast forward a little bit, I then landed in grad school in an offshoot of industrial engineering. I actually went to Penn State and was in a program called Operations Research, which is really kind of frustrated applied math. But it's about mathematical optimization for manufacturing problems, scheduling problems, and so forth. So I kind of had this, systems view early on of how things come together. It's actually where I was first introduced to Dijkstra for scheduling trains and planes, well before I knew anything about networking and shortest path first.
Wow, okay.
So first foreshadowing of eventually landing in networking.
Okay, yeah. So the shortest path first was a literal path involving railroad tracks. Interesting.
Correct.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said systems and workflows, but I don't see the connection because we have no workflows or systems in operations. Everything is just willy-nilly, ad hoc, fly by the seat of our pants, isn't it? Today's podcast.
Yeah, no, I think that comes to the strong cultural heritage that we have of network engineering. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, kind of that incredible growth, you know, not just in the 90s and into the early aughts, but even during the development of ARPANET, right? It took very creative people to take microcomputers and shove serial cards in them and turn them into IMPs, you know, internet message processors. I don't think I have the acronym decode perfect there. But, you know, there's always been an emphasis on doing and getting it done, which is creative and innovative and awesome. I think the growth, you know, once your grandmother got her AOL.com email address and dial-up internet was no longer acceptable to her, you know, how much was bandwidth was enough? Just a little more. And, you know, that whole culture of we got to meet this demand and build it, focused much more on getting things up and running versus thinking about how we do this in a sustainable way. Does that resonate with you?
It does. And so what you're saying is that there was a time when things were less complex, specifically in IT and network operations, such that though not ideal, we could get away with flying by the seat of our pants a little bit more and without this systems thinking. But that's just not where we are today. And I'm going to guess now because, you know, you reading between the lines, because of the complexity and the pervasiveness of networking technology and how it really does underpin everything that we're doing in our personal work lives, you know, cultural, all these kind of things. Is that right?
I think it's notionally right. I would say it is a little better than, you know, the cowboy days of getting those first T1s installed and that first one gig circuit. You know, there are a lot of business operations that obviously depend on internet connectivity, and that drives some stability and some process. But I still think there's that underlying, we don't have the rigor applied to network engineering that probably we had for manufacturing engineering, or that people like W. Edwards Deming and others tried to drive in those environments. And I'll draw just a little, you know, contemporary analogy. I think we see some of that in the whole GPU craze now, right? Where the thirst for acquiring GPUs and building clusters, you know, there's a lot of just get it done, but at much higher budget amounts, right? I'm not saying the two situations are exactly the same, but I feel a similar fervor for building out AI model processing infrastructure as the fervor around building the internet 30 years ago.
Interesting. Okay. So you mentioned from a high level what industrial engineering, and you did say that, like, there was some math involved.
There was, yes.
And certainly some traditional engineering in that sense. But you really spoke to process and systems thinking more than anything else here. So let's drill down a little bit more specifically. What are some of these individual concepts that you learned in industrial engineering that we should start to now, because I'm sure there are very, very many, but what are some that you'd like to call out that we can start to think about in the context of network operations?
Sure.
And in no particular order, but I'd like to get some detail now.
Well, I think the concept of workflow is fundamental. And I think with the conversations that I've had with all sorts of organizations over the years, it doesn't matter whether they're carriers, small enterprises, and everywhere in between, there just is more emphasis on, okay, you know, Phil, you're in the seat. You just need to figure out how to get it done. Nobody's going to tell you how to do it. And there's freedom in that, right? But that means everybody else who ends up in that seat needs to figure it out for themselves too. So thinking about the process of what do I do, you know, to upgrade the software on this router? What does it take to put a circuit into service and authorize it for use and put it into your routing protocols? Like thinking through these things from a process perspective is something that we don't put as much effort into as I think we should. And I'd say there's a corollary here to automation. You know, we talk about how can we be successful in implementing an automation strategy? Well, along with finding the lowest hanging fruit, you know, starting with the things that take the most time repetitively, templatize them, templatize your configs, make it repeatable. And I think process and workflow is the analogy to how a process gets executed to templates for device configuration so they can be more easily automated. That's a real connection that I see.
Now, you're talking about the process of doing. You're talking about this idea of planning and approaching things in a very prescriptive manner, but from an operational perspective and how to do this thing. When going through some of the research yesterday for today's episode, it also seemed that there was an element of being able to get a handle on the processes of the actual manufacturing process itself. Mm-hmm. The widget going through the assembly line and all of the different components and how to understand where there are inefficiencies in the manufacturing process itself at different points.
Right.
There was an element of observability that I saw there and make that more efficient, reduce error, and look at it as a system, that whole thing. So in terms of less process and more the packets going through a system, that does speak a little bit to architecture and design to me as well, not just upgrading code on a core switch, right?
Well, so a perfect analogy to that from manufacturing is quality control and statistical process control.
Okay.
Where you don't want to just be reactive. You don't want to say, okay, this is in service now, how's it looking? And just measure quality after the fact. If we use the manufacturing analogy, you know, if you have something wrong in your process that's creating parts out of spec, you're wasting material, right? That's costing you money and wasting time and resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do want that observability on your manufacturing process to have that closed loop feedback, but you also need to think about, well, how do we build quality into the process from the beginning, and be proactive about it, and not just reactive. And this gentleman, W. Edwards Deming, who was kind of a luminary in manufacturing engineering and statistical process control, you know, from the 40s all the way into the early 90s, you know, he was very much, you need to build quality into the process early. And what that means for NetOps is, you know, thinking through, what do those organizational connections need to look like? What information do I need, you know, from the service ordering team to do the certain thing in the network to put this switch into service, circuit into service, you know, what SLAs are associated with that, and thinking through that across organizational lines and having kind of like an orchestrated workflow. I'm using those terms very intentionally.
And it seems like you're speaking a lot more to organizational behavior and not necessarily the behavior of my router. Although you did mention observability and understanding how the system is functioning, even apart from the reactive methods that we use. So just collecting flow and just collecting streaming, right, from my devices. Right. That's reactive. That's what already happened. In the existential already happened because it might have been, you know, a moment ago, but it's nevertheless the past. So how do we do that proactively? And we'll talk about that. But you have been talking thus far about organizational behavior, like human beings, not how latency looks on my devices or between two links or something like that. So let's get into that a little bit. You know, you mentioned Edward Deming. Can you give me a little color on who he is and what are some of the concepts that he put forth that we should be applying and thinking about?
Yeah. So again, Deming was an academic and a practitioner in manufacturing engineering. And, you know, I won't be able to do his biography justice here on short order, but suffice it to say, I think he worked for eventually the U.S. Department of Agriculture and ended up getting involved in efforts in Japan to help rebuild their manufacturing infrastructure after the devastation of World War II.
Ah, okay.
And he, no one person can take credit for any big thing like that, but he certainly played a role. And his constant commentary was all the concepts for statistical process control, plan, do, check, act, you know, the things that he developed and borrowed from others in the U.S., he brought that all to Japan that had incredible improvements on their manufacturing quality, which is demonstrable from the 50s into the 60s, where, you know, Japanese cars really started becoming high quality and more popular. You know, and obviously we have Honda and Toyota and others today that have really benefited from that. But he was a little miffed, would be the highly technical term, that, you know, here are these concepts that, you know, we put together are being taken taken to heart in other parts of the world, and American manufacturers really weren't paying attention. I hate to use the word rant, but he ranted about that quite a bit, wrote a lot about stuff like that.
Can we go back and define what those two terms are that you mentioned? Plan, do, check, act. I can probably guess what it means based on the, you know, the words. And also SPC, systems process control, I think you said?
Statistical process control.
Statistical process control. Yeah, can you just define those?
Sure. So SPC in general, every good industrial engineer learns about, is a method of measuring quality for the output of a given manufacturing system to understand when an out-of-spec component is really out-of-spec or is the result of natural variation in process. And what you want to use these tools for are to minimize the variations in process so you can get things as tight a tolerance as you can within a certain range, within a range that... you know, fits your budget, so to speak. Train track parts have one set of tolerances associated with them. Microelectronics have another set of tolerances associated with them. But SPC was a process that used graphical analysis and really control charts to track the process output quality process of a given manufacturing line. Plan, do, check, act is exactly what it sounds like. It's your own... you know, human feedback loop, right? Plan to do something, actually do it, check the work, you know, be very data-based on, you know, what did what I do result in, and then take that and feed it back into the next planning cycle. So it's that iterative, you know, I think there's also a variation of plan, do, study, act, you know, where study is a little more academic or, you know, a little deeper than just check. So, but really useful, you know, ideas for lots of things we do in NetOps and beyond.
Oh, yeah. I mean, already I'm seeing the connections to DevOps principles that we've been talking about for a long time now in network operations and applying that, and hence the, you know, the new term Net DevOps, right?
Yep.
And so we'll get into that a little bit more for sure, because I think that's the clear connection here from at least a high level and how that is applied. And then, of course, how we define net DevOps, that's always a thing. You know, everybody's got a different definition as well. But certainly it does involve processes and efficiency and this ability to observe the system to see, you know, for lack of a better term, its health. You know, if it's meeting the requirements, if it's meeting the expectations, measuring that in some way. And then being able to put that into what in DevOps, you know, our CI/CD pipeline, right? Our closed loop, kind of like continual integration, continual deployment. And then of course, all the technical mechanisms involved in doing that, which is, I think, where a lot of network folks, especially me, right? We love the technology. I think that's where we end up focusing and we get lost in those weeds. Yeah. Important weeds, for sure. We need to understand which database to use. How do we ingest telemetry so that we can understand what is the state of the network? And so in that light, when thinking about like observing a system, you know, you're going to see those outliers or those, the, you know, configuration drifts, or there's variations in the system, variations in the metrics, which is something that we need to measure. And it's part of kind of our knowledge base of how we make decisions in networking. But there is a, there's a behavior component to that, like a human behavior, right? There's also this idea of being able to understand how this one metric fits into the entire system. It's like a technical KPI that unto itself means very little, but what does that mean for the health of the entire system? So let's talk about that. I see that in the notes, but I'd like you to expound upon that a little bit.
Sure. Well, let me zoom out and kind of use Deming's framework for what he called, and wait for this because it hits a little funny, his system of profound knowledge. Now, in the 21st century, you know, we're recording this in 2025. That sounds a little funny. I think it had a different weight, you know, when it came out in the 50s or the 60s, but he kind of has four pillars that I think are really useful for thinking about any system of activities, mm-hmm. including network operations. So the first pillar is appreciation for a system. Nothing happens in isolation, not one person, not one router, not one circuit, not one NMS. You know, it's all connected. Your ticketing system, your connections to services in the cloud, right? There are implications for viewing things as a whole, and that can be really, really helpful. Even a router or any network element is a system. It's got hardware and it's got software. There are different software processes and there are different hardware components. Being able to think holistically about any network element all the way out to your organization, I think is really, really useful. Second pillar is something he called knowledge of variation, right? And that's really what statistical process control is all about. Making sure you're observing what's going on so you know what variation is happening, so you can figure out what variation is normal and what variation you can eliminate. That would translate in NetOps to things like, you know, mean time to service restoration, mm-hmm. Mean time to innocence, right? Yeah. And having metrics on, okay, what happened during that outage? What did we have no control over? You know, variation that is natural, versus what could we have done better, more quickly, more effectively, right? So measuring and being very data-based. He follows that into his third pillar, what he calls the theory of knowledge. You should be making decisions based on data. Right. And mm-hmm. In common terms, we would call that being data based or data informed. He also put the idea of small experiments in there. Don't try to change everything across a whole system at once. Do a little change. Measure the results. See what happened. Mm-hmm. And there's some really great examples of that from like small batch manufacturing that can lead to much greater process improvements. You can control things much better in a smaller experiment.
Right.
And then his fourth pillar is what he just calls psychology. That's basically understanding human behavior, right? How people work, how people interact. We're not just Python scripts. We're not just iOS commands. We're not just tickets in service now. Right, there are people interacting with these systems and with each other, and that's an important part of the whole system's view of things. Mm-hmm. Now, on the people pieces, Deming puts a lot of responsibility on management and leadership. For example, you know, he would say quality happens in the boardroom, right? Decisions about process are made at the highest level, which means you can't blame the NOC engineer or, you know, the escalation engineer or the network architect. There should be processes defined with quality in mind from day one. Of course, there's always, we have to be watching for, you know, are people not understanding process? If they are understanding it and they're just not following it, there are, you know, actions and remediations that need to take place. But he does put responsibility squarely on the shoulders of leadership. And I think that's accurate and important today. I'll pause and let you comment there. I can keep going.
Well, that is probably one of the more difficult pieces of this whole thing, because I can study syntax, I can understand LSAs, and right. I can, you know, I can scan an ACL and see where there's a rule that's blocking my traffic, albeit those things might be difficult at times, and they get more difficult as complexity increases. But people are hard.
Yeah.
You know, trying to affect change organizationally, when you're talking about human beings and egos, as you mentioned, you know, we jokingly talk about the layer 8 issue, right? Human beings. And then there's the layer 9 issue, which is the politics and budget, right? Is there a layer 10? I don't know. But if there is,
we could define it right now. That's right.
Yeah, it's probably involving people, right?
Yep.
And so it's interesting that we, you know, we're talking about network operations, we're talking about industrial engineering, which sounds heavy and scientific, but it really does comes down to organizational behavior. And literally, you mentioned the word psychology, right? Understanding human behavior, motivation, you know, the system of rewards and punishments not involved. We're not talking about reinforcement learning. We're talking about human being, a type of reinforcement learning.
Yep.
So it's very interesting that we're going here. And I do see the tie to DevOps, where we always talk about DevOps and NetDevOps as a culture and not a technology.
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple other things that Deming was big on that have influenced DevOps, and I want to influence NetOps even more with. But sticking on the personal theme, just as an aside, this is a really kind of a full circle thing for me, because I learned about all this stuff in the context of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And really rediscovered it 30 plus years later and seeing primarily through DevOps how some of these principles actually influence DevOps. And now what does that look like applied to NetOps? What is NetDevOps or DevNetOps or DevNetSec super duper ops? We can riff on that later. But it's just been a really interesting exercise for me and to kind of work this into some of the ideas I've been talking about via Total Network Operations.
I was going to bring that up, what you're doing now with TNOPS, for sure.
But so other people issues that the Deming really championed was that continual learning, have mechanisms for people always be learning about how they can be using new tools and doing better, in the positions that they're placed in. Driving out fear and encouraging open communication, and this is 1950, right? Today we kind of think, of course we should be driving out fear and promoting open communication. I'm not sure it's any less of an issue today than it was in the 50s.
I agree with you 110%. Yep. I think a lot of what we hear, and I'm sorry to interrupt you midstream, but a lot of what we hear is probably lip service and a lot of corporate speak about, let's break down the silos, and then there's really no silo breaking down. But if we could, even a little, I think the benefits could be profound.
I totally agree. Another thing that has always hit me with him is this idea of removing barriers to pride and workmanship. Like, think about the last time in any job that you've had where there was any emphasis on pride in what you do, mm-hmm. like the result of your work. That's pretty vacant for me. Like, it hasn't really been an emphasis of anywhere I've ever been. Now, for creatives in particular, like, they could see the tie much more directly, right? I created this piece of art, or I created this incredible structure. And being able to have pride in that is maybe those dots connect more easily. I designed this organization, or I designed this process. Or I resolved that circuit issue in 4 minutes and 17 seconds. There's a place to actually be proud of the things that you do there and being able to trumpet that in the right way. Yeah. It's an element I think we're lacking today.
So you've never been so proud of the artistry of a Visio diagram and how
I'll give you a very specific example. In the 90s, working for a carrier, when we were trying to run OSPF over an ATM network, I wanted this one picture that aligned my ATM PNI boundaries and my OSPF areas. And you know what? They're two completely orthogonal, disconnected things. And trying to put them on one picture was an exercise in futility. And it didn't matter. It really didn't matter. But I was hung up on, I want to have this unified view, of the ATM layer and the IP routing layer.
Yeah.
And
that's why we have tabs, by the way.
Exactly.
And on our Visio or on our spreadsheet, whatever it happens
to be.
So
that,
we can
Phil.
Look at layer 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
I'll dig up that Visio diagram from 1997. And fix it now. So
it is interesting that you talked about coming full circle. Now, this is an aside. This is not related to Deming per se, but where you were academically 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago, and then where you are today, and you're seeing all of that now come back into play, and seeing the fruits of that as you're able to apply that to what you've also learned over the past three decades in networking. Where interestingly, I have. I don't have the same academic background. My background, as you know, was I was an English teacher more than 25 years ago. For a long time, I was focused completely on Cisco certifications and,
sure.
and you know, racking and stacking gear and putting, you know, ASAs in. Do we still do ASAs? No, whatever they are now, but you understand what I mean.
Virtual ASA still, I think it's still started.
Yeah. Doing traditional network engineering, and then in the past 5 or 6 years, having the need to call upon my background as an educator, and then as somebody that can, you know, take complex topics and then turn it into something that is digestible and easy to understand, that has been at the forefront of my career the past 5 years and what has propelled me into different new opportunities.
Right.
So, and aside from Deming, but something I wanted to mention as I think a commonality between the two of us, where it is amazing how things come full circle. And so for anyone out there listening, you just don't know where 10 years from now is going to bring you or 20 years from now. So.
Well, I think one of the factors that plays into that is all your learning is additive. Like you don't have buckets, you don't have silos in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You, not to reduce a human to this, but in a sense, you are the sum of your experiences.
Yeah.
And you know what you learned about Plato, or pick your favorite British author. I don't want to put words in your mouth. You will connect the dots because we're pattern matching machines. It's what we do. And so on one hand, you know, this full circle effect is awesome. On the other hand, Scott, what do you expect? You've been, you know, thinking about these things, they've been brewing, even though you haven't thought about Deming for 30 years, certain aha moments help you see, oh yeah, this is how a systems view of NetOps could really be helpful. Mm-hmm. And here are pieces that I can borrow. And implement. Maybe it's not a full fit, right? And let's bring that into the DevOps versus NetOps conversation at this point. We've had so many acronyms thrown at us in network engineering over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't get me started about software-defined networking,
mm-hmm.
Software-defined LAN, software-defined this, et cetera, et cetera. I get the principle, and I get why, you know, software eats the world. Thank you, Mark Andreessen. But all software runs on hardware, and both are really important, and they always will be. So, we've seen the wave we should just be use DevOps for NetOps. It's like, okay, let's think about that,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are DevOps thinkers like Gene Kim, like John Willis, who will talk very openly about Deming and, you know, principles that Deming promoted are part of DevOps, and that's great. I think the gaps exist in, you know, a software creation process that's really, more the focus of DevOps versus working on physical equipment that exists in time and space, and certain connectors go in certain ports, they're not fungible, and you've got to accommodate that. And the way I rationalize this, like I come not to bury DevOps, I've come to praise it. they're really like the whole idea of bringing developers and operators together, you know, less organizational distance, that's great. I think that's very Deming-esque. I think the way I like to view it, I want to stay away from buzz phrases and trends and think about it this way. There's a new set of tools that has a lot of weight behind them from the software development world that can be very useful for operating the network. And I think it behooves me for my individual engineers to get software literate and my organization to think about how should I operate differently because I have this new advanced tooling. So I don't go out there and talk about net DevOps per se, but I do say your network engineers should understand Python. They should know how to use Git. They should understand CI/CD for configuration check-in. Like they're not developing switcher router software or firewall software, right? But at those, you know, there are common principles that I think are super useful, and the whole idea of being able to educate oneself and look at new tooling and technologies that's out there for network operations use is totally within, you know, what Deming would have said 70 years ago if he had the same tools in front of him today.
Well, but tools aside, maybe that tools are not aside, they're critical.
Right.
We are talking about emphasizing processes, right. outcomes, the workflow that leads to those outcomes, and breaking that workflow into its parts, yet at the same time understanding those parts in the context of the entire system, the entire workflow. And then the cultural component involved with implementing those tools, using those tools, why are we using those tools? How do those tools affect these outcomes, right? I mean, so that's really what we're talking about. So we're not saying go learn Python as a network engineer, traditional network engineer, right. because that's the thing to do, because that's a DevOps technology. It's no, right. because that's a method, a technical tool in your tool belt to achieve those workflow outcomes. So those tools may change. It might not be Python in 5 years.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Yep. But the concept would not.
Correct.
The underlying principle there, right?
So here's a way to glue this all together, right? There's a large service provider that I'm aware of that said, we want to go all in on automating our operations. And what they did, like to prioritize, they needed to figure out where to start, right? We've had this conversation multiple times, right? What's the low-hanging fruit versus what's the second tier, et cetera? And they identified over 1,000 workflows for things that happen within their organization. And then they prioritized, you know, what should be done first. They found ways to assign costs to what happens with every workflow, especially when it goes awry. And they have a multi-year plan for tackling automation of those workflows. But workflow definition starts with what are people doing and how are they doing it, and how can we re-engineer those workflows given new tooling that we have. It really starts with the process part, not with Python, not with Junos, not with your latest new pluggable optics.
But given Deming's focus on leadership and the importance of that leadership in the organization, in this case, the IT or the network organization in particular, would you say that this is then largely a top-down approach, and the engineers are more or less the they're the mechanisms that carry out those the functioning of those tools and things like that?
I want to be careful with, you know, broad sweeping statements here, even though maybe I haven't been earlier in this episode.
No. Don't be careful. I love broad sweeping statements.
Well, you know, different organizations function differently, and I do think there are ones that have rigor, like this one service provider that I called out. Like, they decided to, okay, if we're going to do this right, we do need to start at the top. And that workflow identification is not just a top-down thing. That means interviewing people who are doing the job. You know, what are the NetOps engineers doing? What are the NOC engineers doing, you know, at 3 a.m. for troubleshooting? Understanding as is, you know, understanding present mode of operations so that you can optimize, right? Okay, how do we make it better? Start with understanding the current state. And I think that whole, like, we call it workflow definition that has lots of things that hang under it. I think many organizations have not had the discipline to actually do that. They've really just been figuring out as they go, or it's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And I really dig getting in and helping companies think through that. So, you know, that and $5 will get you an extra large at Dunkin'. But, you know, having to think through, what are we trying to achieve here? How does it tie to business objectives and service level agreements or service level objectives? You know, the new terminology. You know, those, the connection of those things to workflow really matter.
And I asked that question because, you know, it made me wonder, if there's such an emphasis on leadership, how can there also be such an emphasis on, you know, like the buck stops here as far as the IT manager or the CIO, right?
Right.
But then there's this emphasis on breaking down silos and open communication among departments and teams. But I guess those two things can coexist. You can have strong leadership that also fosters strong inter-team, interdepartmental communication.
Not only can you, You must.
Okay.
Fair enough. You must. And like, I've had a couple really fun examples in conversation and on the podcast of NetOps organizations that have brought in software developers. And what does it look like to break down silos and think about how the different types of employee think? And I had this one great conversation where, you know, my guest characterized it this way. You know, the NetOps folks were very sense of urgency. There's an outage. We need to resolve it quickly. And the software developers were, 80% solution, iterate. 80% solution, iterate. And I've got time. I don't need to, you know, there's no clock ticking on the wall. You know, I'll fix what I can and check it in so I can leave at the end of the day. And that just very different view of, you know, their jobs and having to bridge the gap and get them to stop staring at each other from opposite sides of the room. You know, that takes leadership, facilitating those conversations, creating a safe environment for asking questions, all that stuff. In my time as a leader, that's one of the things I've always enjoyed. Let's figure out how to do this together. I'm not smart enough to figure this out myself. There's a reason you're all here.
Right? Yeah. And it's not to say that those, therefore, the objectives should be identical, the software team and the network team.
Correct.
You know, when, you know, doing something 80% because you can pick it up again tomorrow might work on certain projects in the software development world. But you don't like say, the core is 80% ripped and replaced. You know, we got 80% of the ACLs running. Yeah. We're good. We'll come back on Monday and leave for the weekend. You don't do that with the network that moves every single packet.
Exactly.
You know, wireless is down right now, but, you know, we're working on it. And, you know, the hospital will be back online, all the wireless heart monitoring. They're probably not wireless, but my example is not good. We're definitely a more mission critical, more we touch a wire, everything goes down kind of, you know, culture in networking. But the principle of still working together with these other teams, you know, in spite of those differences, I think is what we're getting at here.
Yep.
So that way this system, this network, which does not exist on its own, it really is part of the entire system, which I guess we can call the application delivery system or the service delivery system. The network is really just part of that. So when we're talking about, for example, observability and network observability in particular and ingesting all these logs and stuff, I mean, we're looking at one part of this system. We're looking at the network. And we like to say it's a system of systems, but it's actually a system of systems because the overall goal of the whole thing is to deliver that application to an end user. Or as on a podcast like a year and a half ago, Tony Afantis said to me, he goes, you know, it's really not even that. It's about delivering the data to the end user. Because when they log into their bank account, it's not really the application they care about. It's the data that they're receiving. So, you know, that's really our combined effort. That is our joint mission, if you will, right? Of the software team, of the developer team, and the network team, and the security team. You know, in spite of the fact that we're all managing different complex systems, it really is part of this one unified goal.
Yep, you can't view it in isolation. You know, your piece of the puzzle has a ripple effect on everything else.
So you know what, Scott, on that note, I think we should end here. There's a lot more to flesh out, especially if we're talking about organizational behavior and people and that sort of thing. So I want to thank you for your allusion to Shakespeare and Julius Caesar in particular in that quote. And to answer your question, my favorite British author is William Blake. So there's that. And I would like to speak to you again one day about how we bring our past experiences, including education that might seem completely divergent from what we're doing today, and how that applies to our careers today. Because I have some thoughts, especially in the context of AI and what's going on, that I think I'd like to explore with you one day. So on that note, thanks so much for joining, Scott. It's been a pleasure. And to our audience, if you have an idea for an episode of Telemetry Now, or you'd like to be a guest, I would love to hear from you. So you can reach out at telemetrynow@kentick.com. So for now, thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.